May it please the Court, Mike Orfell on behalf of the United States. I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. Your Honors, in this case, the judge that issued the wiretap orders, Judge Snyder, did not abuse her discretion in doing so. The affidavit that supported the wiretaps was adequate to support her necessity determination. Now, later in this case, the reviewing district court, Judge Takasugi, did suppress the evidence from the wiretap. Stepping back for a moment from Judge Takasugi's reasoning and his order, here is why the wiretap affidavit was sufficient. The reason why it was sufficient is that the government in the affidavit stated and explained that it was attempting to prosecute and develop evidence on and even identify all the members of the conspiracy at issue and to garner evidence on them. At the time of the wiretap affidavit, the government was only aware of two particular participants in that conspiracy, Gomez and Leal. It did not know about the other 27 defendants.
You know, let me just, I don't want to interrupt your train of thought, but let me back up for a second, because Judge Takasugi did something that I'm not sure I completely understand. He seems to have made two rulings or shoved two rulings into one. He says the government did not sufficiently use confidential informants or provide a full and complete statement explaining. So your failure to provide a full and complete statement seems to be under a de novo review. But whether the court abused its discretion in concluding that the necessity requirement had been shown seems to be under an abuse of discretion. I mean, what was Judge Takasugi getting at when he said you didn't provide a full and complete statement?
Your Honor,
sort of magic words. You understand that
problem. Mr. Fay, that, I believe, was an attempt to shoehorn a standard run-of-the-mill necessity determination by the court into this court's case law, stating that the government's not providing a full and complete statement deserves de novo review
rather
than abuse of discretion. What this was, like all the other cases that were cited in our brief, was simply a necessity determination. Where this court has applied de novo review have been in two instances. One, where the government hasn't offered any sort of statement at all, such as a case, Calustian, that's in our brief, and another case, Bagnolio, that's in our brief. And the other circumstance for de novo review has been where the government has made misstatements.
Kind of like Frank's hearing material.
Yes.
Omissions, distortions, things like that.
Yes, because then arguably the government has not provided a full and complete statement because the facts that it put in there.
Did the other side actually argue that the statement that you provided wasn't full and complete? Or did they argue that the necessity hadn't been adequately shown?
Like Judge Takasugi, they articulated the standard of the government has not submitted a full and complete statement. But what they actually argued in substance was that there was not necessity in the wiretap. Here, there was a full and complete statement. The government discussed all sorts of things, pen registers, trash searches, and the
mail covers.
Mail covers, yes. And the district court's position, the defendant's position here, would transmute any type of run-of-the-mill necessity determination into an argument that the government has not provided a full and complete statement. Because in any of these cases, in all of these cases, defendants always argue there is not enough necessity because there wasn't enough shown as to X, say, as to informants not being able to penetrate the conspiracy. They say there wasn't enough shown. That's normally reviewed for abuse of discretion, but if you simply phrase it differently and say the government's statement was lacking, then under defendant's view, you get de novo review. This is of institutional concern to us, and it's a problem if this were actually the case, because in a typical case, a wiretap order that's issued by issuing judge is reviewed twice, and long after the initial issuance of the order, after a lot of resources are expended. A wiretap order, as here, is often issued, an investigation goes on for a long time, evidence is developed, and then it's reviewed by a district court judge after indictment. Here, of course, there's been a lot of things have happened. 12 defendants have pled guilty. There's 9 facing trial. And of course, in a typical case, it can be reviewed again by this court after convictions normally. And to apply a de novo standard at each time makes little sense as far as the expenditure of resources goes.
So, counsel, it's your position that the motion to suppress should have been reviewed under the abuse of discretion standard?
Absolutely, as this Court has held in McGuire and a number of other cases. And there's three cases cited in our brief where this Court has reversed a district court for, you know, in this context.
Would your position be the same if there had been an argument by defendants that there were misrepresentations in the affidavits that procured the wiretap? Would your answer be the same?
If the district court had found that there were misstatements in the affidavit and there were false statements, then following Blackmun and following Carniero, another case from this Court, it would be de novo review because there's really nothing to defer to at that point because the things that the issuing judge actually relied on are thrown out by this Court.
And what do you think our standard review is on the motion to suppress ruling?
It's abuse of discretion. There's every reason to think there's nothing to indicate that the standard review should be somehow different between this Court and the district.
What do you our standard review on the motion to suppress ruling that was made by the district court? You say our standard review is abuse of discretion?
Well, the standard review, what is being reviewed here is the issuing judge, Judge Snyder's issuance of the wiretap. That's reviewed for abuse of discretion.
Don't we have to rule on the I thought you were appealing the ruling on the motion to suppress. Isn't that the decision that's before us for review?
Yes, I understand. That's what is appealed from. The substance of what's being reviewed is Judge Snyder, the issuing judge's
exactly.
ruling.
But we have to rule on this motion to suppress.
Yes.
The ruling that was made by the district court on the motion to suppress. In ruling on that, what is our standard review?
I understand. That is entitled to no particular weight by this Court other than the weight that I'm sure this Court must consider the judge's arguments.
And, so are we reviewing the motion to suppress ruling de novo? Is that your what's our standard of review?
Yes, the standard review, as it's usually articulated by this Court, is what you are reviewing is the first exercise of discretion.
What's your best case authority for the proposition that and you've appealed a motion to suppress, yet we're reviewing the underlying issuance. What case are you relying upon to support that argument?
Your Honor, there's three cases cited in our brief, Brown, Comito, and Sandoval, early in our argument, each one of which were circumstances where the reviewing district court suppressed wiretaps issued by an issuing district court, and this Court reversed.
How did we reverse? Did we reverse by saying we were reviewing the underlying?
Yes, reviewing the underlying order, in this case by Judge Snyder, by the issuing judge for abuse.
What were those cases?
I believe they're Brown, Comito, and Sandoval, early in the government's argument in its brief.
Because the ultimate question before us is the sufficiency of the affidavit, isn't it?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
And that's the basis on which the wiretaps were issued.
Yes, it is. And another way.
And as I read the suppression order in this case, what the district court said was the government has failed to show why it couldn't have proceeded further with the use of informants, and there was no need for it to get wiretaps. It had one informant who was ready to buy a substantial amount, and it should have proceeded with that. That's the basically what the judge said, isn't it?
That's the substance of what the judge said, yes. And that is.
And then I gather your major argument is that that would not have been sufficient in light of what the purpose of the inquiry was, is to find, to open up this whole conspiracy, just not the two of them. Because even if they had made a large purchase from Gomez, all they would have put was one person.
Yes.
And the importance of a broader conspiracy, I suppose, is shown by the fact that after the wiretaps, they were able to indict 29 of them, not just the two of them.
Sure. Absolutely, Your Honor. And that is this sort of reasoning that an affidavit can support necessity by virtue of the government going after other unknown members of the conspiracy and developing evidence on them is supported by several cases from this Court. It's not sort of a new proposition. In McGuire, which was a 2002 case, it was the case from this Court dealing with a conspiracy involving Montana freemen, and there were informants that had infiltrated that conspiracy. And in upholding the wiretap there, this Court held that there was necessity because of the statements in the affidavit averring that the informants could not get at the other members of the conspiracy. And this Court stated, quote, "We have consistently upheld findings of necessity where traditional investigative techniques lead only to the apprehension and prosecution of the main conspirators, but not to apprehension and prosecution of other satellite conspirators." That's what McGuire said, and there's other cases supporting that. In response to what Judge Rawlinson was getting at before about deference, is there any deference to the reviewing district court's order here? Well, the typical way that one of these wiretap cases comes to this Court, of course, is after conviction, when the defendant is appealing. And if there was deference to district court, reviewing district court's order, this would mean that the government on these typical appeals could argue to this Court, hey, you should give deference to the reviewing district court's order. This is never what this court does in these cases where a defendant's appealing. This Court always says, no, we have to look at the affidavit itself and the issuing judge's discretion. I'm sure this Court takes into consideration the arguments that the district court has made, either suppressing or not suppressing evidence in these orders, but the focus is whether the affidavit is sufficient to support what the issuing judge did. Here it was. The cases in support of the proposition I was reading from McGuire include not just McGuire, but the Schreier case, which was Judge Trost's decision from just this past September involving the Mexican Mafia organization here in Los Angeles, where the opinion states that seven informants had provided substantial evidence about the conspiracy. However, the affidavit stated reasonably that these informants could not develop evidence on the other conspirators, and thus this Court upheld necessity in that case. And so McGuire and Shyrock are just two of several cases cited in our briefs that support this general proposition. Thus, this Court does not even, if it did not want to, have to get into Judge Takasugi's specific reasoning, although we believe Judge Takasugi erred in two ways, one of which was by applying the wrong standard of review and reviewing it de novo, the other of which was essentially concluding that the government would have had to release an informant from custody and use that informant in some way to gather evidence before seeking this wiretap, essentially putting the government to the option of either you release this informant from custody and use him, or you don't get your wiretap. And
it almost seems as though the judge is telling the prosecution how to conduct an investigation. The judge says, you don't need to wiretap. You should use those informants. They could get your case for you.
Yes, we believe, going a little too far. And we believe that it's adequately stated, if you look at paragraphs 29 and 30 of the affidavit, why it is that we were choosing to not use that informant. For one, we stated that the informant's in custody. And our position is that that's enough. It's enough to tell an issuing judge that an informant's in custody. At least it's enough to support that issuing judge's discretion in not issuing a wiretap. If the issuing judge has questions of us further, which some judges in our district do, perhaps at that stage we would need to come forth with more information. But we believe as a general matter it's enough to say this informant is not available because he's in custody. But we went further than that here, Your Honors. We explained that the informant could be used to make a telephone call to the known conspirators to set up the drug deal, and we explained why we weren't going to pursue that. And we even said this may be an option later on if we want to develop specific evidence on the known conspirators. But here we're trying to get at the other conspirators. And we further, in the affidavit, said even if we attempted to release the informant from custody, we still do not think that this would accomplish the goals of the conspiracy, of getting at the other conspirators, for all the reasons stated in the affidavit, which included the history of the known informant's dealings with these particular known defendants and other history about the particular defendants and other drug dealers in general. This was ample to support the issuing judge's discretion in this case.
Why don't you save the rest of your time? I'll hear from the other side. You can respond.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'd like to go a little out of, and I want to address some of your.
Could you tell us first who you are?
I'm sorry.
These things, and so it's good for the tape for us to know who you are.
Thank you. Tim Lannon for Defendant Fragoso. I also would like to leave a little time for Mr. Dudley, who represents the co-defendant. And I'd like to go directly to the Court's concerns from your discussion with opposing counsel. First of all, I want to address the standard of review, which is, I think, very clear from the cases of the Ninth Circuit, and it's very well articulated in Judge Tagasugi's order in this case, which is in the record between 553 and 556. He starts out saying that that he is going to apply, even though the government argues that de novo, that abuse of discretion standard should be used. He says that this Court must review de novo whether a full and complete statement of the facts was submitted. Now, this Court has held.
That's completely right. But what was not full or what was not complete?
Judge.
What was not full and what was not complete? I've read this affidavit two times.
What was not complete was that the government had not given a full and complete statement why traditional investigative techniques had been used, specifically informants. And not just one informant bias.
See, that's why they explained why they weren't using informants. Takasugi just disagreed with them. That's all. It was full. It was complete. And according to Judge Tagasugi, it's unpersuasive.
Well, that's not what he says, Your Honor.
And I think he really confused language here and forced two things together that didn't fit. I was looking for some big omissions. There's no talk about mail covers. There's no talk about physical surveillance. There's no talk about other ways to do this. And he can say it's not full and complete because they left out all these traditional methods. That's what you're after. Do traditional methods give you an opportunity to accomplish the same thing without intruding on everybody's lives with wiretaps? What method did they leave out that they might have utilized and didn't?
Specifically, They had informants that they could use, and they did not use them sufficiently.
But they gave a full and complete statement as to why.
Your Honor, the full and complete
statement is there. It's whether or not it's persuasive. And as Justice Kennedy said in Brown, when you get to that question, then it's abuse of discretion, and it goes to the issuing judge's decision. See, I couldn't figure out what wasn't full and what wasn't complete. I can see why you could argue a lot of it's not persuasive, and Judge Tagasugi said, well, it's not persuasive, but it was full. Here are all of our informants, all named by numbers and everything else. Here's everything, and here's what we might do with them, but they're in custody. And so in our judgment as investigators, we don't think this will work, therefore. And he says, you let them out of jail. That's still full and complete. It's just not persuasive to Judge Tagasugi.
Well, he says more than that, though. He doesn't say you just didn't let one out of jail. He basically notes that the government, that the affiant basically thwarted at least two what would have been feasible and successful transactions, narcotic transactions. First, in June 29th, where the targets, and these were the main targets, they're called the Gomez Trafficking Organization. They are ready to do a deal, and they want to get better drugs, and the FBI calls it off, saying that, well, we don't want to, as Judge Tagasugi notes.
Is that in the affidavit?
Yes, it is.
Full and complete. Full and complete.
Well.
And he just says, you haven't persuaded me. That's where he made a big mistake. He confused full and complete with reviewing Judge Snyder's determination under an abuse of discretion standard. I'm taking this from Justice Kennedy, now Justice Kennedy, who says, and that was a case where the district court had suppressed the evidence. It came up, and Justice Kennedy said, you look at full and complete de novo. But then when you get down to the decision as to whether necessity requirement had been satisfied, then you start talking about abuse of discretion. You see, every time I look, I wonder, what's missing? And all you tell me was what's missing is that it's not persuasive.
Well, what Judge Tagasugi
is all there.
I think his ruling says that to be complete, you have to lay out what you could do. or why you can't, why investigators will not be successful.
They did that. He's just not convinced.
They said the reason the informants won't do the trick is because the informants can only get to the people with whom they have direct contact. But this is obviously a large-scale operation, and we need something more than that. There's no way we can find out their sources of supply or who are their distributors unless we can listen into their phone conversations with those people. And we could have informants coming, the same informants coming back and making a number of buys, but that would not reveal the identity of the whole organization. Now, why isn't that full and complete explanation of why the, what you might call, more traditional types of enforcement wouldn't work in this case?
Well, as to that, Your Honor, there's a line of cases that says that the fact that it's a conspiracy is not enough, and that drug conspiracies in particular, conspiracy should not be used to justify not using traditional.
Then I thought there were also some cases indicating it's permissible to say that we're trying to get the whole scope of this group. We can't catch them all, and therefore we can't catch them all with informants, so therefore the way to find their, to determine their identities.
Well, the government mentions McGuire, Your Honor, but McGuire is very, is easily distinguishable. That's what, in McGuire they mentioned, they did say that in a conspiracy the government, the standard may be lighter, but they also mentioned four or five times in that decision it's because it was a, they were dangerous, they were trying to overthrow the government. There's a line of other cases that say that just because it's a conspiracy should not prevent, should not allow the government from not giving a full and complete a statement of the facts and to use all traditional investigative methods before they...
Which method did they leave out under necessity? I started reading this. You see, I had the privilege or the problem of reading every one of these things in the United States for 4 years when I was in town. The Assistant Attorney General had to review these things personally. I read hundreds of these things. And so I thought, oh, well, here we're going to go. There's something missing. And I went through here, and I first of all saw the necessity, the identification of everybody, the identity and role, the main customers, the locations where this stuff is, the management of the proceeds, and then I see undercover agents, confidential informants. Did they leave, did they have an informant that they left out?
No. That I'm aware of.
Okay, I'm not either. So that's a full and complete statement of who all the informants are and why they don't think it's going to be sufficient. Then they have physical surveillance. Okay, that's a traditional category that I read 1,000 of. Pen register, traps, trace devices, search warrants, interviews, grand jury subpoenas. They go through every one of these things. Trash searches even, which sometimes they used to have in those or they didn't. Consensual recordings and financial investigations, police reports, arrest records, mail covers. And I'm saying, what's missing? And the answer is nothing.
Well, he agrees with you on the several other methods used, but where he disagrees is on the informants specifically.
You see, I don't agree or disagree. I'm simply looking at Judge Snyder's decision.
I'm not clear. You said he disagreed on the informants. What should have been said about the informants and disclosed about the informants that was not disclosed? He's not talking about failing to state things about the informants. He's saying they should have used the informants more. And that isn't a failure, it seems to me, to state. That's a question of whether they needed to use the informants more.
In any case, Your Honor, as far as the merits do go, Judge Takasugi found that that in fact government, I believe that he was implying in his order that they manufactured necessity by setting up these informants. They had an informant ready to make a buy on June 28th. A month later, the FBI stopped that sale on the grounds that an attempt to maintain some credibility for the informant as a large-scale drug distributor, they didn't want him to wait. A month later, the target calls them and says, here I am, I've got the good stuff, let's do the deal. And the government says, oh, we can't let him out. We can't do that now because he's in custody. But they make no attempt, nor do they give any reason why they did not, they were unable to allow him to complete that transaction.
Was he in custody?
He was in custody. And Judge Takasugi mentions that they could have easily.
So now the rule is going to be you have to let informants out of custody.
No, that's what the government would like to present it as. But if you read Judge Takasugi's ruling, there are several times he believes these. And by the way, 1 week later.
That's the problem. He believes.
No, but one. I understand. But 1 week later, I mean, we can believe it.
Judge
from
Snyder,
reading.
Judge Snyder didn't believe it.
Well, 1 week later. Following the...
And there's no Franks hearing here. You didn't challenge the veracity of this.
No, there's not a Franks hearing, but there's...
You're not going to get very far arguing on appeal that there's some evil motive underneath this whole thing and manufacturing necessity. You never challenged any of that.
Well, we did challenge that, Your Honor. We challenged in our motion, and I think that we definitely asserted in our motion, and we were ready, if need be, to cross-examine the agent, but Judge Takasugi did not find it necessary to do that. And I was going to say that 1 week later, and I think that the district court judge can look at that, 1 week later, the search warrant, the wiretap warrant was signed by Judge Snyder. And it appears that the government really had no intention of using traditional means, that they actually avoided that in order to get a wiretap, maybe because it's easier or for whatever reason. But Judge Takasugi's ruling, I think, is very sound in looking at the number of attempts that were available, the number of opportunities that were available. And I would also add that the cases hold that even if, as Your Honor questioned, even if they are looking to get a bigger, wider scope of suspects, a broader scope of suspects, the government still has to exhaust traditional methods of investigation. And
even though it's their best professional judgment that those traditional methods of investigation would not produce the result they were seeking in this investigation?
Yes, Your Honor. Even if their opinion, they can't just use their opinion. They have to give specific facts as to why in this case, not in general, but why in this case.
Let me ask you a different case. Is it your basic position that the government can never obtain a wiretap on the theory that the traditional methods of investigation will not enable them to determine all the members of this organization?
My understanding, Your Honor, is that it can't be a theory. It has to be, they have to try traditional methods or to explain specifically as to the facts of this case why if we did use this traditional method, it simply won't work. And that has to be...
Well, then tell me, how on earth would the making of a single purchase, this large purchase by one of the informants, how would that disclose either the sources of supply or the distribution network? How could that possibly do that? All that would do is they'd nab one of the two people who made the sale. That's all they could do.
Well, they would nab what they were calling the head of the organization, for one thing, Your Honor. And where that would take them, they might do more. This was a big deal. They were going to make a 10-kilogram cocaine deal that was ready to be made, and the agents essentially thwarted that by not completing it, not allowing it to be completed.
Well, the affidavit did explain didn't the affidavit explain that what they were seeking to do was more than that, more than just making one big deal?
And Your Honor, the problem with that is that you can say that forever. You can always say that. And that's why the cases...
What should they have done in order to identify everybody involved in this ring, the sources of supply, the management, customers, everybody else, and the money? What should they have done, in your view?
Well, what they could have done is what happened in this case anyway, Your Honor. They should have made the deal, arrested him, and then turned him into an informant like they've done anyway. And Judge Takasugi mentions that. The thing that becomes kind of surreal about it is the government is saying that it's not a standard investigative thing. And then 6 months before this motion, they release the guy that they're talking about.
You've obviously been around long enough to know that the testimony of an informant without tape corroboration is garbage.
No, I don't mean just this corroboration, Your Honor. They can work him as an informant. They had done it before, with this specific individual. That's why it becomes a little silly, the government's argument. I think that in some way it was offensive to Judge Takasugi.
Don't they point out that he's a very unreliable informant?
They're using him today as we speak.
Well, we don't know that, but don't they point out that as all informants, as did the one in the case we heard earlier in this case, one minute they're on your side, one minute they're against you, the next minute they're on your side?
But, Your Honor, your question is how would they use that traditional technique to get the supplier? They make that buy, and what happens? I mean, you're saying that you have to. I mean, at some point, you have to let traditional investigative means work before you use the more drastic.
What is your position? What they should have done in this case, they should have made the buy.
Yes.
Then they should have arrested Gomez.
Or if not make the buy, Your Honor, they should have at least attempted to make the buy.
Attempted to make the buy, and suppose they made the buy and they arrested Gomez. And then they went to Gomez and said, okay, you're facing 40 years or whatever it is, but
life, actually.
We'll work out a deal with you if you'll tell us from whom you're getting the stuff. And Gomez says, absolutely not. Indict me. I'm not going to snitch on anyone. At that point, would you agree they certainly could have gone in for
at that point, it might. This may be a case that eventually a wiretap motion would be appropriate, but not at the point where informants are willing and able. There's three informants, by the way. It's not. I just hope the court doesn't just, you know, hang the ruling on, well, we're not going to let a guy out of, we're not going to rule that you have to let somebody out of prison, because that's not what Judge Takasugi says in his order. He never says that. He's talking about that they did not fully use the investigative technique of using informants when they were there, they were available, they were willing, and in fact, the government stopped them from being effective.
Isn't the real question, at what point in the investigative process can the government say, the traditional methods will not work in this case, and therefore we're going to get a wiretap? That's the question, because I gather you said that if they had used the informant and then had been unable to obtain this additional information, then maybe it would have been all right. But what you're saying, I take it, is they asked and got the wiretaps too soon. They should have first tried to use the informants some more.
I think that's what the judge's ruling is, yes, and I would agree with that, yes. That they first should have exhausted what they had in front of them.
I don't want to interrupt you, but you're down to 248. Did you
yes, I hope the court could give Mr. Dudley a few extra minutes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Your Honors, David Dudley, on behalf of Pelley defendant Alan Madrid, taking up where Mr. Lannon left off, what I think happened here, if you look at the timeline, the initial transaction, which could have taken place but was called off by the FBI, was negotiated on June 28th and June 29th. We know that by July 27th, the FBI had made a decision to go for a wiretap. That's less than 30 days later. Agent Strickland, on July 27th, and that's in paragraph 51 of his affidavit, indicated that DEA was asked to check its indices for electronic eavesdropping to determine whether or not these two target telephones had been intercepted previously. So we have an incredibly brief investigation. I think that's partly what disturbed Judge Takasugi and why he believed that a full and complete statement was not provided as to why such a minimal investigation was used prior to getting a wiretap, when you had these informants who were in a position to do a direct transaction with the lead defendants. What took place between June 28th and June 29th? Not much. You have an interview on July 13th that takes place regarding Gomez's early 2000 drug conviction. You have an interview on July 19th with another law enforcement officer regarding his 1998 conviction. You have an interview that same day with LAPD-1, which is used to determine whether or not Gomez's voice is on a tape that was made during the June 28th and June 29th transactions. They had obviously made their mind up by July 19th that they were likely going to achieve attempt to obtain a wiretap 3 weeks after this negotiation head-to-head was called up. You have two surveillances listed, July 14th and July 18th. and you have some phone record analysis. That's it. There are cases I recognize where a short, brief investigation can often still justify a wiretap. But those are cases either where a great number of conventional investigative techniques were used and they failed, or cases unlike here where there was just no end to the organization. And that's what, to me, is most disturbing about the government's position. We've turned Title III on its head. Title III was enacted and allowed lawful wiretaps because criminal organizations were weak at the bottom and strong at the top. In other words, you could do hand-to-hands with the lower-level people, but you couldn't get the top guys. They needed wiretap. Law enforcement needed wiretapping to go up the ladder. Here what the government's saying is we're at the top of the ladder. We're at Gomez and Leal.
We're at bin Laden, and we need the bombers.
Well, Your Honor, first of all, this is not a terrorist case. But
we have to look at these things in the light of all cases, not just this case.
Absolutely. And I think that what in this case, to answer a question that Judge Friedman brought up, what you did too, Judge Trott, is what could have been done is more conventional investigation could have been done. You didn't have to arrest Gomez or Leal after a buy bust was attempted or conducted. They could have been let go. That happens all the time.
Let go, and then you'd sort of walk down the line. And they said, we thought about that, and that's not going to get to where we want to go either.
Well, what they said, what I think Judge Tagasugi is saying is that it's not a full and complete statement because they don't indicate why the use of the informants, that type of buy bust in conjunction with conventional techniques. There's no discussion of why that used in conjunction with conventional techniques would have not worked.
A long-term buyer-seller relationship would not be feasible because the government cannot continually make large purchases necessary to gain useful information about the Gomez.
Well, they don't discuss what about.
I don't believe that a single purchase of kilograms of cocaine would develop enough information about the organization.
Judge, with all due respect, I think
that's why it's full and complete. I just don't agree with him. I expected somebody to argue that even if it is an abuse of discretion, Judge Snyder abused her discretion.
That was going to be my last point, Your Honor.
I've been waiting for it.
I think that we have to look at it, and that's why I brought up the issue of this has really turned Title III on its head. We're allowing the government to identify the leaders of a conspiracy, the people who Title III was invented to apprehend, or at least provide lawful wiretapping to apprehend. And now we're reversing it to say that now we can go after people who, through traditional techniques we've all agreed, have been more easily more easily arrestable, more easily indictable. In this particular instance, there is an investigation of less than 30 days. We don't know what surveillance in conjunction with the use of these informants would have accomplished. The court brought up these informants are notoriously incredible. Well, in conjunction with each other, I should note to the court in the early section of the wiretap, you have three informants, FBI 1, 2, and 3, who corroborate each other, one of whom, I think it's FBI 1, introduces FBI 2, or it's one of the other. One of the others introduced them to Gomez and Leal. They list exact quantities and exact months of transactions in the past. This is the type of informant testimony corroborated by other informants that is far more credible than one uncorroborated informant, such as FBI 2, being there. We don't know what that impact would have been. That cooperation in conjunction with surveillance of by bus, seeing who Leal and Lyle and
Gomez met. I don't want to seem like I'm continuing to quibble with you, but they say physical surveillance. Then they lay out all kinds of surveillance by the sheriff's department and everybody else, and they say, here's what we got and here's what we didn't get. And here's why it doesn't work.
Your Honor, just because they discuss surveillance, they list two surveillances, one of July 14th, which is of a residence pertaining associated with Gomez, one is July 18th of a residence associated with Lyle. And what they say is that those two surveillances failed. And those appear to be the initial surveillances of those properties because they say surveillance was initiated. The word initiated is used in the first sentence of both of those discussions right there. So they have two surveillances, of course, they do say part of that. Several. Now, several could, of course, mean two. But you don't have a lot of surveillance being conducted. Certainly, you don't have surveillance being conducted in conjunction with undercover meetings. Nowhere in this affidavit is it explained why FBI 2 and or FBI 1 could not have been released, at least temporarily, as Judge Tagasugi noted, as many other
people in their position are, why they couldn't have been released, do these meetings, why couldn't surveillance have been conducted to see where Leal and or Gomez went before those meetings, where they went after those meetings, who they contacted on the pen registers before and after those meetings. Why couldn't more conventional investigation have been done? And I think that's why, even if the standard is abuse of discretion, there should still be a upholding and affirmation of Judge Togasugi's order. We're living in a day and time, and I'm glad the Court brought up the Bin Laden case, because we're living in a day and time where Congress has given the executive branch much greater authority, much broader authority to conduct wiretapping. And that's why I think it's incumbent upon these courts, such as this Court here, to really hold the government to the necessity standard, so we don't start using this broad power to cause wiretapping to become a typical investigative tool that's used all the time. It should only be used when it's necessary. So when Mr. Land and I are here, we may be speaking on behalf of Ms. Fregoso and Mr. Madrid in the back here, but we're also speaking on the part of many, many Americans whose conversations are intercepted every time one of these wiretaps orders are issued. And we're going to have more and more of these wiretap orders, and perhaps we should. But we should also be very, very vigilant in making sure the government complies with the standards of Title III. And I really think if we look at this investigation, I would ask the Court to really, before making a decision, review the timeline here. Look how short this investigation was. Look how little was done before the government straight to a wiretap. Maybe it was right for a wiretap at some point, as Mr. Landon said, but this was too quick to the gun. They went for it too quickly. And if it can go for it in this kind of case, there are very few limitations, at least in narcotic cases, where they wouldn't be able to get a wiretap.
Thank you, counsel.
Your Honor, I have three very brief points. First of all, most of Mr. Dudley's argument was focused on what could have been done. It's almost a mantra of this circuit that the government does not have to exhaust every traditional investigative technique. That's not a requirement. What's a requirement is that the issuing court have a basis for finding necessity, and there's enough of a basis in the affidavit here. Secondly, about the timing, how much time has to go by and how extensive an investigation has to be, if this Court's concerned about that, I would refer the Court to Echevarria-Olarte decision that's in our brief, where the informant was a pilot in a small drug conspiracy, and that was the only informant. 2 months after the pilot came to the government with information about the drug traffickers, the government obtained a wiretap, and this Court held that there was a sufficient basis for necessity there because, under the facts, the government had shown that the pilot was unlikely to be able to determine the identities of the other people he did not know about. That was not a lengthy investigation, and this Court upheld it. Thirdly, on the rhetorical issue of how much danger are we in as citizens from the current wiretap regime, I would refer this Court to the Aviles decision, a 1997 decision that Judge Noonan wrote. Judge Trott was on that panel, where this Court cited statistics that there were, at that time, 170 million phones in the nation, and there were only 500 wiretaps that particular year. Now, that statistic is 6 or 7 years out of date. If anything, since then, due to the proliferation of cell phones, I would think that the percentage is even lower. But that's what's in this Court's case law, and this Court concluded from those statistics that the wiretap regime seemed to be working fairly well in keeping wiretaps from being too much of a danger to us as citizens. That's all I have, Your Honor, but I would like to answer any other questions if the Court has.
Thank you both very much. The case just argued and well briefed is ordered submitted. Do you want to take a recess before the next case?
I don't know.
All right. We'll take a 10-minute recess before hearing the next case.
Thank you.